Welcome to the SMI Bulldog. This is Brian here with you. We talk about SMI serious mental illness advocacy and public policy. Joining us today is Arizona Legislature Representative Cesar Chavez, representing State Legislative District. It is 29, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, thank you for speaking with me today. I really appreciate this.
No, thank you, Brian, for inviting me onto your podcast. It's a pleasure.
No, I wanted to ask you one thing up front. And I hope this doesn't seem like a weird question to ask, but have you ever been on a podcast before, or would this be the first time that you're on a podcast?
I have been on numerous podcasts, yes.
Okay, cool. I always just like to ask that because I never know. But in any event, I wanted to ask you, now, as I had mentioned to you briefly before we started recording, when I originally started this podcast, I tended to focus on media and mental health, things such as representation of mental illness in film, things like that, before I decided to switch the focus somewhat to SMI. Now, for those unfamiliar with the term, whether it's in the context of the state legislature and various public policy vernacular, or in general sense of the word on a federal level, or even for those who might be listening outside of the US, how would you describe that term, SMI?
Well, SMI by its initials, seriously mentally ill. Sorry, you know, these are individuals that belong to one of our most vulnerable populations. Individuals that should be treated with dignity, with respect, and should be afforded the ability to seek treatment, the treatment necessary in order for them to live a life of goodwill and a life deservable of anybody here in the state of Arizona.
Absolutely. Now, one thing I definitely wanted to ask you about in that regard is I've noticed, and I don't know if this observation is accurate or not, but I've noticed that there tends to be, lately in the last couple of years, a bundling or packaging, as it were, of various related issues, such as homelessness, recidivism, the word I can never pronounce, I don't know if I pronounced that properly, et cetera, and like the jail to treatment center and vice versa. So I've tended to notice that they've often been bundled and packaged into like one specific policy item. Have you seen that as well? And do you agree with that strategy or approach?
It definitely has been bundled in into one umbrella. And I think that this is because there is a lack of information or a lack of education. I'd lean more towards education. When we speak about mental health, we automatically bundle everybody into one place, and it shouldn't be that way. It is a scope of so many different areas, so many different silos in which mental health lies under, and not one person is the same to all. And because of that, I believe that the legislature has had such a hard time or the inability to tackle on the issue of mental health and be extremely successful. I think there would be a handful of individuals here at the state legislature who have been able to do that, who have either the background in mental health, who have worked in this space, or who have done their diligence and have researched it. I mean, we all come into the legislature being sort of a one matter expert on something. And then we get thrown into the health committee, commerce committee, education committee, and expected to know it all. And those of us that are learners, at least myself, I love to read. I love to ask questions. I love to understand and be educated. I think that, you know, going on in this world of life, I cannot pretend to assume that, for example, you, Brian, know exactly what it means to be X, Y, or Z, or what it means to identify with X, Y, and Z. So I can't just come in and say, Brian, you need to think this way, but more so, hey, Brian, can we have a conversation? Can we sit down? Let me hear you. You hear me. We listen to one another, and then we can talk to one another about these issues and how we can, you know, come to a consensus on them. And I believe that many people don't tackle it that way, whether it's in politics or out in the real world. They don't tackle it that way because they want to talk about one subject and assume that it all fits under one subject.
Oh, absolutely. And that's part of the reason why I still get a lot out of this podcast is I like having those conversations. And honestly, without getting sidetracked to any sort of tangents, which I'm fairly good at going off on tangents, that's what this is all about. I mean, that's what, when something needs to be fixed, when something needs attention, talking about it and getting voices at the table, that's how the progress is made. So I'm so happy to hear you say that because I absolutely agree with that. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, do you think what's going on in Los Angeles and New York City and fill in the blank, and what I mean by, you know, what's going on, you know, depending upon what day of the week it is or what news article or whatnot, there are often shocking and disturbing and disgusting reports of violent attacks, whether it's a subway attack in New York City or, you know, fill in the blank. And one thing I wanted to ask you in that regard is, do you think that level of chaos, for lack of a better word, will eventually make its way to the Phoenix area, either City of Phoenix proper or this metro area?
You know, I think that we're down the same path that some of these cities were at one point. And you look at San Francisco and you look at New York City and you look at it with a different lens because you automatically assume that's the problem. And I think that that's the incorrect way of looking at it. I would rather us look at it, how did we get here and why have we neglected to support individuals who have been crying for help, right? I'm not of the belief that throwing money at an issue or a problem is going to fix the problem. I do believe that there's a balance between both policy and dollars or appropriations. I sit on the appropriations committee and some of the bills that come through, you look at them and you're like, wow, this is great. This is definitely going to help, you know, our education system or our hospital system or infrastructure. But then you sit back and you remove that microscope and look at a panoramic view and you start thinking, but how will these dollars be implemented and how will they actually help the individuals that they were attempted to help? That's where we get lost. And I think that as government, we react more than we proact. We look at things as this is happening right now and we need to fix it right now, rather than this might happen in 5 years. What do we do right now to prevent it from happening, right? And so if we look back at the history of these major cities like San Francisco and New York City, at one moment there was an opportunity to fix or remedy the issue. And it's not incarceration. It's not, you know, taking individuals off the streets and putting them somewhere. It's about providing them the opportunity to remedy the issues that they're living with, whether it's because of mental health, whether it's because of a chronic drug addiction, whether it's because you recently fell on hard times and you recently got evicted, right? I'm going to move into sort of the housing space that we're going through here in the state of Arizona, the crisis that we're facing. What do we need to do? And it's not just one cookie cutter template. It's multiple facets of it. And so I think that we are in a good place where it will be avoidable to become one of those cities. But it takes a mountain of individuals, right? It takes the school board member, it takes the city council member, it takes the mayor, it takes the governor, it takes the legislators, it takes the county supervisors, the sheriff's office, right? And I fear that we go down the notion of I either have my next reelection or I can't come out too strong and potentially lose my job, or I simply don't want to wrap myself around something that really doesn't affect me. I think that those are all non-starters. I believe that we need to treat humans, as individuals, that we live amongst one another. And there are different approaches, right? I think that there are individuals who are currently homeless that if you took them in and provided them the service of getting them back into the workforce, getting them the health needs that they need and into a home, they'd be very successful on their own. There are individuals who have been addicted to drugs for a month, a year, 2 years, many, many years, and whom will probably have a rougher start, but eventually they can get there. And then you have the individuals who are SMI, who potentially need the service and care of an organization or an entity that is going to seek after them and look after their well-being to ensure that they are in a good place, in a place of care, and in a place of trying to make them feel whole. I think that there are many different approaches. I will say that not one approach is the wrong approach, nor is it the ultimate approach. Mm-hmm. But if we can sit down at a table, have the conversation, and have the conviction and willingness, especially government, have the conviction and willingness to do something for these communities, then we'll be in a much better place tomorrow than we are today.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you had alluded to this just a moment ago, and I know that there might be some people listening who saw that I'd be talking to you. So I might as well ask this. And what I mean by this is, for those who you had tweeted, and this is probably, well, we're recording this almost at March, so it's not quite old news, but it's still somewhat current. And what I mean by that is, there was a you got some grief about a tweet that you tweeted recently, and as you may know, my point was not to, you know, bring you on and you know, give me any more grief. That's not what I do. So I'm not going to go down that road. But I did want to ask you. Do you understand why some people may have taken offense at that, or is there any way that you looked at it and said, maybe I should have, like Monday morning quarterback, so to speak, would you have about that whole situation as it went down?
I think that there are topics where the conversation around them, to start that conversation, is very sensible, right? There are individuals who have loved ones. There are individuals who themselves suffer from some sort of mental health issues. And to hear somebody who potentially doesn't have that loved one, or who potentially does not identify as having some of being on that mental health spectrum, I can definitely see the defense that comes from it, or I can definitely see the hurt that might come from words that are mischaracterized. And I will say that in a tweet, we can only fit so much in 280 characters, and that's not my excuse. I grew up in Maryvale. And Maryvale has always been classified as, the bad part of town. And my work here at the legislature has been to ensure that it no longer is considered that bad part of town, but more so considered a place of hardworking individuals, a place of perseverant individuals who, you know, work day after day to ensure that their families have everything on the table, a roof over their head, clothes on their backs. And in no way, shape, or form was my message to offend anybody. And I will say, Brian, and I always hold myself accountable, that if anybody felt offense off of my tweet, I wholeheartedly apologize. What I meant from that tweet, and thank you for providing this space for people to be able to hear about the woes of mental health, because I do believe that a platform is very important and imperative for this narrative. I drive up Grand every single day after I leave the Capitol. I drive up Grand and vice versa coming to the Capitol. And then I get off on Indian School over to 51st Avenue, which is about where I live. And what I have seen over the last 6 years that I've been down here at the Capitol is heartbreaking. It is individuals with no shoes, individuals who just run into oncoming traffic because they're in their world, individuals who sleep on the sidewalk, on the school bus bench, on the city bus benches, individuals who are living under bridges, individuals who are living in tents. And I think those people living in tents are, you know, in a better situation than those people that are literally sleeping on dirt. That's inhumanitarian. That's inhumanitarian, Brian. That should not exist anywhere in the world, but definitely not in the United States of America.
Yeah, because when I saw that, I mean, the first thing I thought was how frustrating. You know, you were coming from a place of being frustrated, not the most articulate. As you said, there's only so many characters on a tweet. And so, absolutely. So, the thing that offends me probably more than a given tweet on a given day is the legislature. and for those who might be out of state listening to this, I wanted to ask you: do you think it's hypocritical? I don't know if hypocritical would be the right word. It might be. For the Arizona State Legislature, and this is the current session I'm referring to, though it may as well be the future session as well, though I hope not. Do you think it's hypocritical for them to be undermining teachers, students who are trans or bi or gay or whatnot, just undermining teachers, students, schools on one hand, and then on the other hand, turn around and say, oh, by the way, we need more beds at ASH, Arizona State Hospital, and we need more of the downstream crisis care. Whereas in the meantime, all the upstream resources are being kneecapped at every opportunity. I mean, whether it's taking library books, you know, on the, so do you think there's some level of hypocrisy or inconsistency in the prevailing messaging coming out of the state legislature?
There's definitely a broken narrative. Right now that you were asking the question, what comes to mind was a Republican colleague of mine who made a mention in one of their committees that, you know, criminal justice starts in the schools. And I definitely agree. There is a pipeline of prison that has existed for many, many years that can be avoided. I used to work for a tutoring company where, you know, we did a lot of research and where we found that many of the individuals who end up in prisons are because they didn't receive the adequate support or the adequate education during their K-12 education. Many of them because they don't know how to read, right? So for the legislature to continue cutting funding mechanisms towards counselors, towards social workers, towards these very crucial systems that help individuals. I'm an openly LGBT member, Brian, and one of the bills that came forth was one where the administrator, the school teacher, or the counselor has to tell the parents if the child is LGBT. You know, I went up to the sponsor and I said, look, may I share my story with you? I never wanted to tell my parents that I was gay because my parents come from a conservative Catholic family who had never had any interaction with anybody that identifies with LGBT and who had at one point or another had made comments that, you know, I felt scared of. And I had the ability to come out to my counselor, Miss Burns. And Miss Burns did not tell me to continue hiding. Miss Burns did not tell me to come out of the closet or whatever we want to call it. Miss Burns provided me not only the nurturing of an adult, of a teacher, of a counselor, but she also provided me with the guidance to be able to have that conversation with my parents. And so I know that, like Miss Burns, there are they are multiplied to a million, you know, within our teachers, our school staff, all of these individuals who these kids trust. And for the legislature to assume that these individuals are bad people is, as you mentioned, hypocritical, it's mediocre, and it's just wrong. It's just wrong.
Exactly. And so I think it's just, there's a lot of, you know, inconsistent messaging as far as, on one hand, we've got this crisis level of care, but on the other hand, you look at all the upstream stuff, such as, you know, in the schools, that is quite literally the front lines of so much that could be addressed at the front lines. And yeah, it just not, does not add up. Now, on that point, and again, I just want to reiterate, you're on the good guy side of, you know, in my mind, as far as our state legislatures go. So I just wanted to underscore that point for those who might have your name associated with, you know, an ill-advised tweet. So I just wanted to underscore that. The other thing that I wanted to ask you is, you're on, you know, another side of the aisle, the correct side of the aisle for those. I don't normally mention my you know, affiliation or whatnot on the podcast, so as to keep the focus on the issue at hand. But I did want to ask you, why has SMI policy in Arizona traditionally, and I say traditionally in the context of, you know, post Sarno, like in the last 20 years, but why has it traditionally been in the purview of Republican legislatures rather than, do you know why? Because that's something that I've always found interesting, because in other states, it's almost like the complete opposite, where it tends to be Democrat you know, specialty. Whereas in the state of Arizona, it traditionally tends to be a Republican cause. For lack of a better word, do you know? Do you have any theories as to why that is? Because I've always found that disconnect intriguing, for lack of a better word.
I think that it goes back to the nature of the makeup of the legislature. I mean, we've the House of Representatives has been under Republican control for the past 50 years, and the Senate almost 20 years, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of the lobbying firms or lobbyists from the organizations that deal with SMI or mental health, they automatically go to a Republican to introduce their legislation and to push that forward. I would say that there are individuals, though, in the Democratic caucus on both sides of the aisle. One of them, you know, the late Senator Bradley, he would always introduce legislation on mental health revolving around children. That was his expertise, and that's his legacy. Unfortunately, a lot of that legislation goes unheard just because of the makeup of the legislature and the political party divide. I tend to work in a way that I don't care about the credit as long as it gets done. So I will reach out to my Republican colleagues and see who is willing to sponsor the bill, and maybe I'll co-sponsor onto it and we'll work together. But I do think, and I do believe, that we need to move the needle into where both parties are talking about this issue, where both parties are introducing legislation, and that both parties get the ability to pass this legislation and get signed into law. I don't think that mental health is a partisan issue. It's not about being Democratic or Republican. It's about helping one another, those individuals out in our communities. It's about helping them and providing them the remedy necessary.
Oh, absolutely. And the only reason I mention that is because it tends to be always the same R's who are sponsoring this legislation. And so much so that it almost becomes a, you know, and I hate the term, like a political football in many ways. And yet those are, and it's always the same R's that are kneecapping the teachers, kneecapping the students, and yet they're turning around and saying, oh, but on the other hand, we want to, you know, more funding for ASH. And so that's why I mentioned it, is because I don't see the consistency in many of these sponsors.
This place is definitely an interesting place, Brian. And I think that if more people in our state were able to see the inside of this place, they'd be just as surprised as the findings that you have found. I want to believe that as more of us start getting involved into this, whether it's because of personal experience or because you truly are passionate about the issue, I want us to start moving away from that, Brian, from moving away from just one person is the matter expert on mental health or on K-12 education or on tax policy. I want us to move away from that. And I want us to have a blunt conversation on how it is that we're going to do that. Because you come into this place, and although we have a smaller legislature in comparison to other states, we have 90 members, 30 in the Senate, 60 in the House. It's when it's a meeting of the minds, you really have a huge diversity. And that's where the conflicts begin, right? Because I want to be in front of the camera. I want to be the policy author. I'm the smartest one. And that really is no good for the state of Arizona.
No, it isn't. And you touched on, you know, music to my ears as far as just the dialogue and having those conversations. Because if it's always the same one or two or three people who are always the ones at the big kids table, and everyone else gets relegated to the little kids table, I don't see a lot of progress in that strategy.
Right.
I think that you need as many voices at the grown-ups table as possible, and not always have. But in any event, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you wanted to mention, or that I didn't ask about? So we have just a few minutes left.
I think primarily what we need to focus on is what we have at play here, right? And it's people. People are those that are at play here. They're the ones who get jeopardized based off of the policies, based off of the fighting across communities and between organizations, and the Twitter shaming and all of that. That does no good for anybody. I've always held an open door policy. And just like you reached out, Brian, I ensure that we give those individuals who reach out to my office the time of day to have that conversation. We might not always agree, but I can assure you that I am listening and that I will take into consideration your comments. But what I want us to focus on is ensuring that we're creating policy balanced with funding to be able to conquer a lot of these evils that we see in our community. And that evil is not helping one another. That evil is not giving a lending hand to somebody who is in dire need of it. And those individuals on the streets are, you know, were former executives, their moms, their dads, their grandparents, they're the son and daughter of somebody. There are LGBT brothers and sisters. They're, you know, individuals who are just like you, individuals who are just like me, and we need to help one another.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, for those who might have been listening and might be disappointed or whatnot that I didn't ask you about this or that or whatever, the focus of the podcast is about serious mental illness, and so some of the other stuff going on in the legislature and with activity in the legislature is simply outside the scope of the show, and I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, pelter you with questions that aren't related to the topic. So for those who might have been listening who might be upset that I didn't ask you about this or that, sorry.
But if they have any looming questions, give my office a call.
Yeah. So I just wanted to clarify that. So if anyone's listening and thought, well, why didn't you ask about this or that? And because probably because it was not related to the topic of this podcast. But anyway, I do thank you so much for speaking with me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. Anytime now.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you very much. Thanks, those of you at home or wherever you may be. Stay safe, everyone, and talk to you next time. Bye.